Hello, hello, and welcome to Arthouse Garage, the snob-free film podcast where we make arthouse, indie, classic, and foreign cinema accessible to the masses. I'm your host, Andrew Sweatman, and today on the show we are discussing the new horror film, Talk to Me, from directors Danny and Michael Filippo and distributor A24. Joining me for this conversation is film critic and horror aficionado, Jessica Scott. Stick around.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Have you seen the group chat? They're doing it again tonight.
No.
Please. It's my mum's Remembrance Day. I just want to forget about it.
Who's up?
I'll do it.
Cannot go for more than 90 seconds. Am I clear?
What happens after 90 seconds?
Don't want to stay. Light the candle to open the door. Blow it out to close it. Put your hand on it. Now say, talk to me.
Talk to me.
What did the hand feel like?
Felt amazing. I could see and feel everything on the other side. So my mom, she was trying to reach out. Mom, I'm here. Still been seeing stuff.
You mean seeing stuff?
What if we opened the door but we didn't shut it?
Oh my god, they followed us!
I like it.
They're not gonna stop. They're never gonna stop!
Welcome to Arthouse Garage. A24 is a film studio that has made a name for itself, producing high quality and creative movies, and a rather popular portion of the films they put out are horror films. Things like Hereditary, Midsommar, The Witch, Under the Skin, Green Room, St. Maud, X, Pearl, and Bodies, Bodies, Bodies all came from A24, so when they bought an indie horror film out of Sundance this year, people took note. That film is Talk to Me, which you just heard the trailer for. The film is from Australian directors Danny and Michael Filippo. The film follows Mia, who is grieving the recent death of her mother, when she and her friend Jade encounter something supernatural. A couple of their classmates have a creepy ceramic hand that can supposedly possess you if you complete a certain ritual. They treat it basically like a party game until, wouldn't you know it, things go too far. My guest today is Jessica Scott, a film critic and horror lover. She's a writer and editor for filmcred.com. She also reviews films at wewhowalkhere.com, and she's a contributor for Slash Film, Dread Central, Inverse, and Fangoria. Jessica, I'm so happy to have you on the podcast today. Welcome, and how are you?
Thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here. I'm doing very well. Excited to talk about horror movies today. So thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I'm so glad. And we met at a film mixer thing and quickly found out you love horror. And I was like, I got to get you on here to talk about scary movies, because I love scary movies, but I don't feel like I watch certainly as many as you probably. But I always feel like I have so much to learn, and like there's so many classic horror things that I need to fill in the gaps and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I always love talking to someone who is a big horror fan. So I believe that you saw Talk to Me at Sundance and you were a fan of it. And again, you watch a lot of horror movies. It also feels like lots of horror movies are coming out all the time. In general, why did Talk to Me stand out to you?
First of all, it was very scary. I don't think a horror movie has to be scary to be good. Horror does a lot of different things, and you know, making somebody sleep with the lights on doesn't have to be one of those for a horror movie to be successful. But I found it very scary, which I love. You know, after you watch enough horror movies, you kind of get to the point where not everything scares you as much as it used to. So finding something that freaks you out is refreshing. But also, I know some people are a little overwhelmed or over, you know, trauma as the monster or grief as the monster in horror right now. But I thought this movie handled it very well. And it hit me at a time in my life where I could relate to it a lot. So I, you know, I lost my father about 2.5 years ago, and watching Mia go through, you know, the loss of her mother, I related to her a lot. But also I think it tackles a lot of well-worn tropes in horror, well-worn subject matter, and it does it in a fresh and an interesting way, which I, you know, is all I'm looking for a lot of times in horror movies, because, you know, nobody, it's hard to have new ideas, but if you tackle old ideas with a fresh perspective, that's always exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's really well put. I think for me to answer that question again, not as well-versed in horror, just how creative it is. Like I like the opening shot, really the opening sequence, immediately I was like, this is really cool. Like these, I feel like I'm in good hands with these, you know, directors based on that opening sequence, and continue to be that way. And yeah, I love that. Just to like talk about horror in general, I guess I heard once that horror is a good way to experience some of those negative emotions like fear or grief or whatever in a way that you have consent and you can still feel safe and explore those feelings. And I think this, that's cool to hear that it had some personal resonance for you. And I definitely have had that with horror movies over the years. The Babadook is actually one that I really think like helped heal me from some different things back in the day. But yeah, so that I always love when a horror movie can do that. Mm-hmm. Well, digging in a little more specifically, what did you appreciate about this film, either the story or the filmmaking, or were there specific things you liked?
I did. You know, there are different things with Mia's story. I liked that they weren't afraid to get into some of the uglier parts of grief. And I don't mean that in a judgmental or a derogatory way. Just how much it kind of takes you over and runs your life, at least for a little while. I am a fan of horror that is not afraid to be bleak and mean-spirited. And this is a very bleak film that has a very nasty streak. There's something I'd like to discuss a little later on where that's not such a good thing. But overall, I'm a fan of horror that kind of, my worldview is very bleak and mean-spirited. And I appreciate horror that that kind of dives into that, because as a horror fan, I've always thought that as a genre, it's the most honest and truest way of expressing yourself through fiction. Like exploring fears, exploring what scares us and what troubles us, to me that gets at the crux of what it is to be human more than any other genre. That's one reason I love it so much. And when movies aren't afraid to not give you a happy ending or not tell you that everything's going to be okay in the end, I always appreciate that. Yeah.
That's really cool. Yeah. Yeah. I think this movie for me, mentioned like that opening sequence, as I mentioned, just like that level of visual prowess. I meant to look, so I know these two directors, they're brothers, I think they're twins, and they started out doing a bunch of like horror comedy things on YouTube. I meant to take time to watch some of those, but I didn't. By the way, they just announced that a sequel has been greenlit by A24. So Talk to Me, the number two, which is kind of a funny title. but excited to see where this continues to go. But yeah, I just thought, like, thematically, like, we talked about grief quite a bit, and I have a little more to say about that later as well. But just like the themes about, like, peer pressure and especially like internet culture these days, I thought was really well done. I had a friend compare it to Bodies, 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 actually, I mentioned earlier. And, you know, where that film, like, really leans into the satire and those things, this one I feel like is horror first, but still brings in some of that. And I really like that because, yeah, I agree. This movie scared the hell out of me. And that I feel like doesn't always happen. I don't know, with movies, but there were a few sequences that really got to me. And yeah. And just the writing generally, I think there's a little bit of a high wire act without spoiling it yet. We'll talk spoilers in a few minutes, but towards the end of the film where you're not exactly sure who to trust. And Mia's not sure who to trust. And I genuinely was unsure for a few moments. And I thought that was really well handled. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm almost 40, so it's silly of me to say this, but it felt very authentic. Like, it's hard for, if you're not a teenager yourself, or if you're not really close to that age, it's hard for you to write characters that age well. But I think they did that. You know, obviously they're younger guys, but just the idea that, if you've got a haunted hand that lets you talk to the other side and you're a teenager, what are you going to do? Of course, you're going to throw a party. Yeah. Kids today, they're going to have their phones out. Everybody's taking a video. Mm-hmm. It just felt very true. Like, that's, I think, a common gripe that perhaps non-horror fans would have with horror movies is nobody would act like that in real life. People would do this in real life. This is yeah, exactly absolutely. What would really happen. And it would go that wrong, I think. So I like that they kind of captured that. And it felt like you were there with those kids. I liked all the performances. Yeah. And you could feel, you know, the friendships and the camaraderies and the rivalries and everything that everybody remembers from high school. So I just, I really liked just the atmosphere that, like, Bodies, Bodies, Bodies is another movie I love. I love that party going horribly wrong vibe. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I think too, again, because it really feels like, okay, if they had drugs or like the peer pressure to drink or whatever. And actually there is a sort of nods to that, because the younger kid at the very beginning, he's like, you better not be smoking in front of my mom or whatever. We should try it. But it also, I mean, I agree. Like, it felt familiar to when, like, I don't know, I'm in junior high and my buddy has a dirty magazine or something. And it's like, hey, well, you gotta, I want to know about this too. Like, whatever. But yeah, just like the way that, or like when the young kid is like, please, I want to try this. Like, just seems so much like what the younger brother in a situation like that would do. Yeah, I thought that was all really well handled. Did you have anything about this film that didn't work for you?
Yeah, I have seen, now that more people have been able to see it since it's, you know, hit wide release, I have seen some critics of color in particular talking about, you know, Mia, things start going wrong. And Mia has kind of this surrogate family with Jade and her mom and her brother. And they were talking about how, you know, Mia's Black and most of the other characters are white. And she is the one who is kind of demonized. She's the troublemaker. She's the one who introduces drugs and everything. She is the character that the movie treats the most cruelly. And it's kind of an example of colorblind casting not taking nuance into account, I think, where, you know, the only Black character is being punished. The only Black character is being made out to be the one bringing trouble into the situation. The only Black character wants to be assimilated into this white family. I have seen other critics talking about that they took issue with that, and rightfully so. That makes a lot of sense. And, you know, I think it's important to, like, read a lot of reviews from critics of color and to see what they say about it, if it's not something you noticed, or if it's, you know, it's something I picked up a lot more on the second watch after hearing what they had to say. Mm-hmm. So I would just, you know, that aspect of it, and also take into account other voices when thinking about the movie. So that would be my main answer to that question.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I hadn't really thought about that, you know, especially when there's like the younger generation, I feel like, oh, they're going to be post-racial about things. But of course, that's me as a white person, like, not realizing again that we need nuance with those things. So yeah, thanks for bringing that up. And that's an interesting perspective. I did see that there's some protests about the film. Like, some countries are not screening it because there's a trans actor that it features heavily into it. And the filmmakers have, you know, been like, you know, very pro trans rights and everything, as you would expect, and as they should be. But yeah, that's a an interesting other little wrinkle to it.
Yeah. That actor put out a statement that was really lovely and really supportive of the queer communities in those countries and talking about how important representation is. But yeah, it's really unfortunate that just that person's existence.
Yeah. Cause it's not like it's a trans story at all, really. Like it's not, they're just there. And I, exactly, I like that we're at a place in society where that isn't weird, you know?
Yeah. And it's not even like, this is this character, their pronouns are they, them. It's just normal as it should be, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, my only real criticism that I could think of, and this is a pretty minor thing, but just like talked about how there's this theme of grief, throughout most of the film, I felt like it could have been a little bit more, I expect it to be a little more pointed in the ending maybe, because I think it gets to a certain point and then the ending just kind of, we have like a great horror ending. I love the ending of this, but it doesn't exactly tie into the grief as heavily as I thought it might, I guess. But it's also something like, I was like, what do I have anything negative to say about this? And I kind of like had to come up with it and made me think I need to watch this again and make sure that's true. Cause it may be just my own, interpretation of it, not seeing that in the ending. But again, like it gets to that certain point where the stuff is happening with her father, and then that final act, which again is great, but maybe we should go and get into spoilers now. Or do you have any non-spoiler favorite moments of the film, and then we can talk about favorite spoiler moments of the film?
Okay, non-spoiler favorite moments. I do love, you know, the party montage where I love a montage anyway, but where they're just goofing around with the hand. I love just the design of the hand itself.
Yeah.
It's very creepy, but also very inviting the way it's positioned and the writing and everything. And just, you know, Mia, Sophie Wilde is, she is so good when she slips in and out of the different personas and, but yeah, just the hand itself. I'm a sucker for a good seance movie. So I really love that. If they don't start selling replicas of that, they're fools. Oh,
yeah. I'm sure they will. A24's got such good marketing and merchandise and stuff. I'm sure that will be out there.
Yeah.
I've mentioned the opening sequence a couple times, but it really is like the fact that it's all one shot, I think is really amazing. One of my favorite movie openings ever is Children of Men. And it's because it's that single take that ends with this really surprising thing. It reminded me of that immediately. But that was fantastic. And then I guess this is kind of getting into spoilers. So spoiler warning now, if you haven't watched it, highly recommend if you're into this sort of thing. A lot of people, I've talked to some people that, oh, I like horror movies, but Possession is a little too much. I don't know if I can handle it. And I'm like, it is really scary. So maybe not for you. But I do recommend it. So, but the sequence, the first thing that really scared me was that sequence with Riley, the younger brother, when he gets possessed. And of course, that's also when it goes wrong. But it I had this like the hand over mouth, like, oh my God, what's happening? Sitting in the theater, so upset by that. And I thought that was just really well done. And then again, that final sequence too, I once at a certain point, I was like, oh, I see exactly where this is going, but I still freaking love like how it, like the final moment and really that last, it's probably only like 60 seconds or something where she's like walking to the hospital and you realize like, she's like in the ethereal spirit realm or something. And she's not experiencing time the same way, but it doesn't like explain that. You just feel it suddenly. And it's like, oh, this is really cool. But yeah, also just the whole sequence where it is where it really digs into the grief stuff where she, the spirits are telling her, oh, I didn't actually kill myself. So her mother, I didn't actually, you know, die by suicide. And this isn't really your father. He's an imposter. And like, that's when it really started to play games with Mia's head and kind of with the audience's head as well. I thought that was all really, really well done. But yeah. What about spoiler moments for you?
That moment when Mia's dad is banging on the door and when watching that again with an audience, when I knew what was coming and they didn't, was amazing. The gasps, like there were different little pockets of people and they were all like exclaiming the same thing at the same time. Yeah, it was so much fun. Horror crowds are the best. Yes. But I love, again, not to be, you know, bring the room down, but I just love, how cold and lonely it is at the end. My conception of hell has never been about flames and pitchforks. It's always the idea that you are alone in the cold, in the dark, knowing that love exists, but you can't access it anymore. And that's what that movie is to me. It's just, you are alone for eternity. I like how it kind of introduces a sympathy for the spirits, mm-hmm. because they're just alone in the dark by themselves, and then suddenly there's a light. Why wouldn't they want to possess someone and be on Earth for a little bit longer? But I like that it doesn't go too far into that. Just enough mm-hmm. that we're there with Mia and we get it. But I like that it's kind of an extra gut punch. Like, she's lost so much, and now she's just alone and adrift.
And then she's a party game, you know?
Mm-hmm. She's just a party favor to be tossed aside and forgotten. It's horrifying. But it's also like weirdly beautiful and human. And
Really emotional.
Mm-hmm. I really like the fact that the movie can pull off that tone. Like, sometimes mm-hmm. it's really funny and really this party atmosphere and kind of wild. And then it's got this really heavy existential, like, just gut punch at the end. I like that it balances it so well. There's a real energy to the movie I really mm-hmm. like that these guys bring to it. As far as other spoiler moments, I'm a sucker for a cloaked or hidden figure, you know, Toni Collette on the ceiling in Hereditary, things like that. Yeah. So when there's a spirit in the corner of the room that kind of materializes slowly, that's maybe the scariest part to me, when right before the foot moment.
I was gonna say too, like, there, not to say, because like my friend said, oh, it's just like Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. I was like, it's actually like, I feel like really different tone wise but there are some really funny moments, like the foot thing, and then there's like a punchline later about that, which is also like, when it's happening, it's also horrific, but it's like kind of darkly funny. But then it just, you're right, there is such an energy to it that I think allows for those funny moments to really land. Mm-hmm. And like the relationship drama, I thought worked really well too. It's, I guess, sort of a lesser part of this movie, but like, she seemingly has a crush on her, you know, her apparently ex, who's now with her friend and all of that. But it's not like overplayed or overdone, but I think it's an important dynamic and done pretty well. But anyway,
it is. Yeah. And it feels so honest. Like, they keep saying they held hands once, like that's the extent of their relationship, but she's still so hung up in, like, I think everybody can remember things like that from junior high or high school. And they feel like real people with real histories, which is always, you know, you want, most of the time, you want your characters to be lived in and fleshed out and be real people. And I really cared about everybody, even when I was, you know, upset with people, or, it helps you, you know, mourn along with Mia and kind of be there with her the whole time, which is always important for something that kind of leans heavily on character and grief and things like that.
Well, Jessica, thank you so much. Is there anything else you wanted to say before you go?
I think, you know, talking about a possession movie, I think we have to mention that William Friedkin just died a couple of days ago, which is a big loss for anybody who loves movies. And especially, you know, a possession film. I think this movie does a good job of, you know, setting itself apart or kind of carving out a niche for itself. But at the same time, you kind of have to acknowledge that any possession movie lives in the shadow of The Exorcist.
This couldn't exist. Absolutely.
You're always going to compare it, you know, any greatest horror movie list or any possession movie list, for sure, you're going to end up being compared to that movie. And again, this is more of a teen party, like, you know, we mentioned Bodies, Bodies, Bodies a couple of times, that kind of thing, but it's always going to be living in the shadow of that movie. So I just wanted to talk about that. And, you know, I'm eager to fill in some blind spots of his films.
Me too.
Myself, but, I don't mean to turn it into a Friedkin podcast, because I could do that, but I just wanted to mention that, just that it does a good job of differentiating itself, but we have to kind of pay tribute to the master as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And totally makes sense to bring that up, and especially with that so recently. And what a huge loss. I actually had another friend say, hey, are you going to do anything Friedkin related? And so maybe get them on, get you on, we could do a Friedkin podcast. Who knows? I'll see if there's time for that. Definitely a huge loss in the film community, and worth acknowledging. Thank you so much, Jessica. This has been a real pleasure talking to you about this, I would love to have you back very soon on the podcast. Where can we find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at We Who Walk Here. I have a website, wewhowalkhere.com. It has, you know, writing specific to that site, as well as collections of other podcast appearances, other places I've written, things like that. And, you know, I'm an editor at FilmCred. I write for Dread Central, Daily Grindhouse, other places. So I'm always sharing my work on Twitter and on my website.
Very cool. I will link to all of that in the show notes. Thanks again for your time this evening, and we will talk to you next time.
Thank you so much.
Huge thanks to Jessica Scott. What a pleasure talking with her, and I hope she comes back again very soon. Stay tuned to the podcast in the next few episodes. Planning to get back to the Aronofsky series. We had parts 1 and 2 some weeks back and had to take some breaks, but we are getting back to that. The next episode will feature Requiem for a Dream and Black Swan. And with that, thank you so much for listening to Arthouse Garage. We have a few years worth of episodes now. You can hear all of those in your podcast app of choice. Our theme music is by composer Paul Hunefeld. Learn more at appallingproductions.com. If you want to support Arthouse Garage, become a patron over at patreon.com/arthousegarage or find a link in the show notes. You can also buy an Arthouse Garage t-shirt at arthousegarage.com/shop. If you want to support us without spending any money, leave a rating or review in your podcast app. That is hugely helpful. Stay in the loop about Arthouse Garage and the films we're covering by subscribing to our email newsletter. That's at arthousegarage.com/subscribe, or you can email me directly, andrew@arthousegarage.com. And of course, follow on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. Just search at Arthouse Garage in all those places, or find links in the show notes. And that will do it for this episode. Thank you again so much for listening. And until next time, keep it snob free.